Welcome to Your Business, Your Life with Matt DeFrancesco, your personal financial technician. Whether you've had years of success in your business or just starting out, Highlift Financial can help you create a vision for your business, life, and family, and align these for generational wealth. As they say, what happens in your life affects your business. And now, on to the show. Well, hello and welcome to Your Business, Your Life with me, Matt DeFrancesco. So, hey, I'm really excited to be with you guys again. And I'm really excited about today's guest. As always, I always have great guests. But this one, I think, is going to give us some really unique insights into the automotive repair industry, especially the collision industry, because he's basically grown up with automobiles. So Jake Rodenroth grew up with cars. He's from the Jacksonville area. He started working on cars with his dad back. I guess you were pretty young when you did that, right?
Yeah, I got the first one at 14 and I still own it. So I never had a chance. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So. Yeah, you can't get, it's just in the blood there. So, and I know he moved on from there to become a technician with Mercedes-Benz at 18. And then after working on the mechanical side for a number of years, he spent the next 13 years with a mid-level MSO in various roles there. And, then from there, he joined a national consolidator and he helped them to grow to 120 locations. So Jake's responsible for product integration and training in the collision industry. And his company had a revolutionary diagnostic interface. And he's also worked with companies like iCar and Verifax to create awareness and build curriculum about diagnostics in the collision space. And we're going to talk a lot about that because that's going to be something that's huge in the industry. So anyway, the reason I wanted to have Jake on, he's got his finger on the pulse in the industry. We had a great conversation before the podcast about where the industry is going. And I think he's got some really great insights, especially for the independent shops in this rapidly changing industry. So I'm excited to hear his insights. So, hey, Jake, how's it going?
How's it going, Matt?
It's going fantastic. Okay. Great. It couldn't be any better. So. Great. But yeah, so I mean, you know, that was the one thing I was really excited about when we were talking is I thought you had some really, really unique insights into where the industry is going, especially the independent shop owner, because I think we both kind of share a passion for those guys that have a shop and they've created a great business, and they want to continue doing it, but there's a lot of pressures, outside pressures on them to be able to keep a sustainable business, not only for themselves, but for future generations. So basically, I kind of gave a top view of your business. I wanted to see if you could just expand on it a little bit more and explain to the audience how your experience has equipped you to address the changes in the industry.
Well, I think for me, before I ever got started, you know, with the car stuff with dad, my father was a professional race car driver.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, you know, I spent the, you know, he raced races like, you know, the 24 Hours of Daytona.
Oh, wow.
You know, ran big tracks, Rolex, you know, Grand Am, ran down to Sebring, Watkins Glen, all these major racetracks around the U.S. And so for me, it was growing up in motorsports, seeing the newest technology in a racing platform first, and then moving into a street car. Right.
Right.
And I think what helped with the Mercedes dealer I worked at was actually Brumos, and Brumos Porsche is known around the world for being one of the best privateer Porsche teams in the world. They've won the 24 Hours of Le Mans. They've run Daytona and such. So, you know, motorsports really was a big avenue for me. And I found out quickly that I couldn't make it as a driver. So I just wanted to be around them. And so I got into the mechanical space working at the Mercedes dealer right next door to the Porsche dealer. And just trying to learn the business from the bottom up. And, you know, so I had to clean floors and I had to wash, you know, loaner cars and do all those kinds of things. But eventually the technician shortage caught up to them and they needed some young help. And so that's where I got a chance. And, you know, for the young people that may be listening, you got to look for those opportunities. You got to see where you got to get your core job done and then work to replace yourself. And try to find, you know, a way to get in there. But ultimately, the person that replaces you needs to do the job as good or better than you did. So,
right.
You know, but as far as the technology side of it, you know, things like seatbelts, ABS, even advanced driver assist is in race cars. And now with the electric revolution, we're starting to see that in race cars as well. So
really, you know, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different series, like Formula E, for instance, is an electric Formula series. Cool. Where it's open wheel, it's all electric. And so really cool stuff on what they're doing. And, you know, when you're trying to keep up with technology and training and to motivate new employees that may have an electronics background and not a collision background, and to, you know, encourage those folks to join your business, you got to understand that stuff and kind of know where to look. And so, but for me, like I said, I've always wanted to focus on things I didn't know and learn, and racing's a great avenue for it because there's a lot of stuff going on. So
I'm sure, you know, and I'm going to kind of deviate a little bit from what we talked about, because you brought up something about this idea of young people and the technician shortage. And this seems to be a huge problem in the industry. Yeah. And so, you know, I think a lot of kids are sold a bill of goods that, you know, you got to go to college and then get a good job. And what we're finding is a lot of these kids are going to colleges, you know, they're not really college material. So they're getting maybe a liberal arts degree, and then they're not able to find jobs or very low paying jobs. And, you know, college is a big investment to just flipping burgers at McDonald's. So, and I think that the technical skills, whether it's in automotive repair, collision repair, you know, even plumbing, heating, electricians, you know, all of those things, you know, they've been minimized. And what would you say to young people that, you know, about the opportunities that are available there in the domestic trades fields?
Well, Matt, let me just be clear. I did not go to college.
Okay.
For the people in the back, I did not go to college. Okay. And I'll tell you that I believe in college. I think college is great. But there's some people like myself that just at the age I was at, I just wasn't cut out for it. And a lot of years I wished I'd gone back. But the reality is the collision industry made me a homeowner at 20.
Yeah.
And so I had to make money to pay for my house. And so, you know, there's a lot of kids that may look at that avenue and, you know, certainly, you know, college is going to open some doors, and maybe, and if you don't have it, maybe it's going to close some doors. But I look at it like, you may, if you don't go to college, you need to have a skill. You need to have multiple skills. Right. And so that's where my son is 6 and I'm teaching him how to weld. And wow. it's one of those things that he may never use it, but I want him to have the ability to do it with the guys in the neighborhood like I do if he needs it. Right.
Right. Right.
And so it's just one of those things. And that's what my father did. He said, you know, you may never use this, but I want you to be able to diagnose a vehicle, mm-hmm. make a repair, take something apart, you know, organize all the nuts and bolts, you know, clean everything, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, I encourage those kids. And I tell you, I'd like to give a shout out to the Rankin Technical College in St. Louis.
Okay.
It's one of the most amazing places I've ever been in my life. Mm. And I'll tell you, if as a young kid that grew up in a town that didn't really have a technical school that had everything in it. And I'm not just talking automotive, if they want plumbing, if they want to be a machinist, whatever right. it might be, that technical college is phenomenal. And that's where I would send my kid if he wanted to go. Because I'll tell you, they have a full-scale body shop, probably 30, 40,000 square feet.
Wow.
And they have about a 50,000 square foot mechanical facility. They have a performance and racing division with chassis dynos and things like that. But I think just from the being able to build things, I mean, all of us are going to be husbands and wives someday, mm-hmm. and you're going to need to hang a ceiling fan, you know? So those are the kinds of things. I mean, even if a kid decides he wants to go do something that's, you know, more traditionally white collar and is at a desk every day, you still need those technical skills to work on your own home, or you're going to need to employ somebody. So at that college, I'll tell you, they had a building within a building, and there mm-hmm. there were 41 bathrooms in that building.
Wow.
And each student got a bathroom that they had to put a toilet in, a sink in, electrical, the whole bit, and it had to pass code. So I think it's just truly amazing some of the things that are out there resource wise. And we've got to get that to our young people. And I've told the shops, the body shops in particular, I said, how come I can take my kid to Home Depot and they'll teach him how to install, he can take a little class to install a toilet or lay mm-hmm. a piece of tile. Why aren't we doing that in the collision business?
Right.
I feel like we could teach them how to pop out a dent or to how to lame seam sealer or to how to something fun. Right. Obviously it's got to be safe, but I think about all those kids that are going to college that don't know how to change a tire or mm-hmm. check oil or do any of the things that are basic maintenance on their vehicles.
Right.
And so we need to hold those kind of communities, those community clinics, if you will, and use social media to help get those kids in. Cause there's some parents out there that are a little scared to send their kid to school with a car and they don't know anything to do with it. They don't know how to do anything on it. You know,
well, that's right. That's right. You know, it's interesting because I've got very basic skills in that area. But I have to show my kids, like, you know, I had to laugh. This was a couple weeks ago. My one son calls me. He's like, "Dad, I got a flat tire." So I have to drive down. I have to show him. Okay, here's how you do it. And I made him do it. But, you know, and you forget about those things. I think we take them for granted sometimes, like checking the oil. I was driving his car and I'm like, "Man, this thing's running rough." And then I'm like, "When's the last time you had your oil change?" He goes, "Well, I don't know. It was within the year." Like, oh God. Yeah.
10,000 miles ago.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's crazy. Yeah. And, yeah. But also, you know, it's funny. I was talking with a guy at a conference a couple months ago who teaches, he had a collision repair shop, and he was teaching at the local community college. And he was the one that was really saying, "Look, you know what? We just don't have enough kids that are coming through learning this business." And he goes, "You know, the beauty of it is you can learn it and earn money at the same time." Where, yeah. You know, we're going to college, you're pretty much captive. You can't really do a whole lot. And I mean, I laugh because I have clients of mine who have body shops. I have ones that are plumbers that, you know, are electricians who make more money than clients of mine that are physicians. They don't have $300,000 worth of debt, and yep. they don't have medical malpractice, and they can work as much or as little as they want.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of on this kick now. Like, we're going through with my youngest what he wants to do. And my wife and I are kind of having this battle because he needs to go to an elite university. And he's like, I want to learn something hands-on. He goes, "I hate the classroom," which was how I was. I mean, my parents forced me to go to college and I hated being a student. I couldn't wait to get out, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, as a guy that got in really young, I was constantly told what I couldn't do.
Right.
And what I wasn't qualified to do or didn't have enough experience to do.
Yep.
And, you know, the thing is, I think if I didn't love the cars, I wouldn't have stayed in it. And it's one of those things that, you know, on the weekends I'm working, pulling engines with my dad and doing all this kind of stuff. And then I go to work and they're like, "Well, you're not qualified to do that." I'm like, "I took a gearbox out Saturday. I can't write that fender? Are you kidding me?" And so an industry, I think that we've got to do a better job of that. We got to do a better job of assessing the talent and what they're doing. And it's one of those things that I think that as you're coming through as a young technician, you kind of pick a road, and it's mechanical, it's collision, it's glass, or it's PDR. It's not, "I need to learn everything on that car. I need to understand everything that's going on, have a general understanding of what's going on." Right. Because I tell you, as we get into these more complex vehicles with high voltage powertrains in them, and, you know, advanced driver assist, if you don't understand multiple disciplines, you can really struggle. Uh-huh. And so, case in point, if the radar is off center because it has a front sway condition, a mechanic is going to look at you and go, "I have no idea what he's talking about." Right.
Right.
That's a body shop issue. Right. Then if you took a body shop guy and say, "Well, you know, the vehicle talks on medium speed CAN bus and it's not talking to the ADAS controller in the trunk," he doesn't understand the wiring diagram to figure out what's what.
Right.
And so it's really frustrating when you don't understand that different disciplines. So one of the things that I've recommended for technicians is that you want to make sure you learn the things you've never done. Mm-hmm. And so if you work in the collision space, go study the mechanical side of that. That way, you know, the customer who owns the same car doesn't get two different answers. You know, they'll give you two different perspectives based on what they know.
Right.
And not what they can prove. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, as we get into these more complex vehicles, you know, studying, doing product knowledge and using the resources from an OEM is going to be key.
I firmly agree. You know, it's interesting. The analogy I was thinking of is the physician who's a specialist. Now, he had to go to medical school, so he had to do all the same coursework that the general practitioner did, but then he had a specialty, but he still has enough of the base knowledge. And I kind of apply that even in my business, because I always tell people, I know enough about this stuff to be dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay. But when I'm talking to a client, I know enough about it to identify, well, here's what the problem is. And then I can go and get them to the specialist they need and help them to coordinate the solution, because, again, they can't talk the language. I can.
Yeah.
So I think there's an analogy that's in there. Just, you need to know kind of a broad base. You don't have to be a specialist in each area, but have a broad base, because then you can better serve the customer there.
Like I said, you know, as a kid, never had a chance. So dad's the car guy. Mom is an infectious disease specialist on the medical side.
Okay.
So in the world we're living in today, that's really a big deal, right? And so she said something that I found was really profound, and I said it at a speech I did at SEMA. She said, in the medical side, the host has been relatively the same for years, mm-hmm. and the host being people.
Right.
The medicine, the diseases, and the technology continues to evolve, right?
Right.
You know? And so we get coronavirus that comes out of nowhere, right? And so, right. And her specialty was kind of HIV, right?
Okay.
And so she said, but in your world, the host continues to evolve.
Yeah.
And the technology and the processes continue to change. So in many ways, your world could be more difficult.
Exactly.
You know? And so it's pretty crazy. And I'll tell you, you know, as a guy, I was a shop guy. When I had to do my first presentation, she handed me my clicker. There's the TV. Dad's checking you for accuracy. Go. It's like a lot of pressure, man. You know,
that's right.
But it was good for me, because I had to get in front of a big crowd for the first time. And that was intense. But so it's just one of those things that, you know, like I said, technicians got to continue to take continuous education around things and study what's going on, not only what's going on with the car, but what's going on in the marketplace as well. The customers are evolving too. And that's a piece that, you know, if I can use a phone to check and audit your repair, mm-hmm. you better understand what kind of access I have, you know?
Right.
And exactly. So that's the kind of stuff that's new to absolutely everyone, whether it's collision or mechanical.
Exactly. And that actually leads me into my next question, is about what do you see are the biggest challenges that independent shop owner is facing?
Well, you know, it's certainly around tooling, training, and people. You know, attracting the talent is one thing, but you know, the product knowledge is another one. And I'll tell you, there's a whole new revolution of OEMs coming to us with new electric powertrains. Mm-hmm. They're different than anything else that we've ever seen. And I'll tell you, the EV cars are so different than the ICE cars and what we work on day to day. You can't use tribal knowledge to fix them.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of specification. And I'll tell you, that was the frustrating part for me moving from mechanical to collision. The mechanical, it's all about tightening sequences and bolt specification, torque mm-hmm. specs, fluid quantities, all those kinds of things.
Right.
And when you're repairing a vehicle under warranty, especially where an OEM is paying, you better be buttoned up. You know, what's the concern? What's the cause? What's the correction? You make sure you answer those, right? Mm-hmm. And then when I got into collision, you know, they're cutting a quarter panel off, and I'm like, how do you know you did that right? How do you know how many welds hold that thing on? And, well, I've been doing it for 30 years and that's the way we've always done it. And, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, you know? And so that's where I think the collision industry has got to evolve. They've got to move to a more documented model.
Right. Oh no, I can see that. I can see that. What about, and it seems to me that technology is really also changing the industry in a great way. I know we talked about even some of the new diagnostic tools. We talked about the video you were in with, for lack of a better term, they were like the virtual reality goggles, things like that. I mean, can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah. So that basically what that's designed to do, uses artificial intelligence to map the vehicle that you're actually looking at. So okay. when you're looking at the car, you say, show me the high voltage lines in this car, where all the high voltage is. It'll right. literally overlay where the battery pack is, and then all the high voltage running through the chassis and where it is. So in other words, where could you potentially get hit, right? If you had an open line or something like that.
Right.
If you wanted to know where's the cooling circulate in this vehicle, you can look at the car through the VR goggles, and it overlays on the car where all the cooling circuits are. You want to show a wiring connector. It'll show you what pin is positive, negative, you know, things like that. So it's designed to take repair information that's somewhat difficult to navigate and make it easier for a technician to find things.
Okay. That's pretty cool. So, you know, one thing that we talked about again, and this is, I mean, technology, I think, is we look at the inner, just how you do your job. That's one thing. But we talked a lot about the customer experience too, for the independent shop owner. And I mean, that's something I see this in all industries, that, you know, the businesses that are evolving and making it much easier for the customer are the ones that seem to be progressing. The ones that are just staying and doing business as usual are flailing. And we talked a little bit about this. I wanted you to kind of share with the audience your thoughts on just how the independent shop needs to create a better customer experience.
Yeah. So when I talk to the shops about that, I ask all of them if they ate dinner last night. And they look at you like, well, of course we ate dinner last night. And I said, so how many of you ate at a restaurant last night? And give me the hands, right? And they show their hands. And I said, well, you know, you automatically assumed that everybody at that restaurant that handled your food, they washed their hands and they knew what the proper cooking temperature was. And the lobster was flown in from Maine and right. all those kinds of things until you wake up the next day and you're sick.
Right.
Then you start backtracking. Where did I go wrong? Right. I'm never going there again. Right.
That's and right. So, that could be where you went wrong. So,
right. Yeah. So, you know, customers think the same thing when they walk into your body shop. They feel that you know what an XLT F-150 is and that you're fully trained on that vehicle and that you're going to use the correct parts and you're going to settle it with their insurer and it's going to be minimal issues until right. you give them a reason to think otherwise.
Yeah.
And so that's the frustrating part. And I'll tell you, you know, if the shops hear nothing else out of this, I used to always ask our customers, why did you buy that car? They would come to us after a crash, expecting me to ask how many cars were involved, how fast were they going, what was the weather like that day? No, why did you buy that car? Because a Prius owner will give you a very different answer than a Corvette owner.
Oh,
and so you need to listen to what they're saying. Right. And they're like, well, I bought that car because I love the leather seats and all the bells and whistles. Right.
Right.
I bought that car because I love the color. Get the painter in there to make sure the paint's going to match and everybody, because that's the first thing he's going to look at. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like sniffing through their garbage, man. You learn a lot about them by asking a probing question like that. And that's a question they don't anticipate you to ask.
Right.
They're not ready. They're not really ready for that one. Yeah. Uh-huh. So and we have to remember that consumers get in a crash every 10 years. They don't do this very often. And so they've kind of heard what their friends that have had of an experience, what the insurer has told them, maybe what their agent has told them, and they create their own story on what it should be.
Right.
And so as a shop, we need to make sure we deliver accuracy. If you tell me you're going to call me by 10 a.m. the next day, it has to happen. Right.
Right.
And I don't expect you to write curb sheets. I'm not a big believer in that because right. I don't feel you can answer all the questions that a collision repair requires.
Yeah.
So how much, how long, where are the parts coming from? When am I getting it back? All those kinds of things. And it's just tough to do that, you know? So I do feel like we can give realistic dates on when we'll have those answers. And so full disassembly, the diagnostic scans, the measurements, eliminate all the variables that could come back and bite you.
Right. right.
And that way you have that proactive conversation and your dates on delivery are realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, especially with the supply chain stuff going on right now, you can't assume you're going to have that fender by tomorrow.
Oh, right.
Or even Wednesday or, you know, Monday or whatever it is. Right. So you've got to get some facts around that. So,
yeah.
And I'll tell you, it's communication is everything. Like I told you, I had a car that just spent 7 months in the dealer and I always had to call them. Oh. And they got to a point where they didn't want to talk to me on the phone. They would only text, you know, and it was not like I was ugly to them, but it's like, guys, just give me a call every week. Even if you have nothing to tell me, you know,
right. Right.
And don't make me think that my car went off into some black hole over there and I don't know what happened to it, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think communication is a big key to be successful.
That's, you know what? And I think that's so true. You know, it was interesting. I remember reading a study on, and this is in the financial service industry, which I'm in, and they were polling clients and saying, what is the number one reason why you leave your advisor? What did you think? What do you think that is?
Communication.
Well, it's, you know what it is? It's called abandonment. They felt abandoned because they weren't being communicated with.
Right.
And so it's funny because years ago, I started instituting even with my clients, you know, once a month, I just make a touch base call. And most of the time it's either an email just saying, hey, just checking in to see how you're doing. Everything looks good here. If you have any questions, issues, concerns, reach out to me. If I don't hear from you, I'll assume everything's cool. Take care of a great day. And it's amazing how just something as simple as that creates this loyalty. They never feel abandoned. And I think, you know, it's funny. I've had my cars in shops before where they're not communicating with you. And it's like, it's frustrating as all get out. And you know, but like one of my clients, I remember the last repair, I sent it to his shop and it was amazing how he, you know, they had regular calls, regular emails sending me. As a matter of fact, when I got the car back, he called me up personally and said, "Hey, just want to make sure everything was good." And I'm like, "Oh, that's good." I said, "Yeah." And I figured, I said, "You know, thanks for doing that." And he goes, "Well, I do it for everybody." And I'm like, "Really?" And I said, "That's amazing." The owner was calling every single customer after the car was delivered just to ensure that everything was done. Does that build goodwill?
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you, you know, when I was a young estimator, I gave somebody bad service and I knew it when I did it. And I knew that I just didn't want to talk to the guy because I knew he was going to be upset. Everything that could have gone wrong in the repair did.
Yeah.
And, you know, he came in and I was so ready to get rid of him. When it was done, I was so ready to just hand his keys. And he came in and he handed me a book. And at the time, it really ticked me off. I was really mad, right? And, yeah. And he gave me the book, Raving Fans. Uh-huh. And I told my dad about it. And he says, "Well, did you read it?" And I said, "No." And after I read it, I called him back and I thanked him for it. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to return your book because I did read it and it was eye-opening me. And it really kind of changed my outlook on how to deliver this, how to deliver service. Right. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you need to keep it and look for the opportunity to hand it to somebody else.
There you go.
Cause he said, don't feel bad because somebody handed it to me.
Right,
so
exactly.
So it was really one of those eye-opening things that I learned very young and I'm so fortunate for it. Cause there's some people that don't get that opportunity to learn that until later, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, I encourage you, I'm not much of a reader, but it was one of those things that, you know, at least books anyway, I read service manuals, but
I know. Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things I took the time to read that and I was like, wow, that was pretty impactful.
Exactly. So, you know, it was funny. I just had a guest on, we were talking a lot about just, you know, finding the balance between life and business and the physical, the mental, and the business acumen that we have to develop. And we talked a lot about personal development and investing in yourself. And it's funny because I do this all the time. But you know, none of my guys are readers. All right. And I'm always here. First thing you do, you need to read this book. I'm not reading it. But then it's funny. I hammer them. And then they read it. And all of a sudden, it's like they start gaining these insights. And then they start growing. Yeah. And I think that's really what the key is, that we can't continue to keep doing business, whether it's in the collision industry or if it's in financial services or no matter what, can't keep doing the same things over and over again. Things are changing too fast, you know?
Yeah. So, well, and I think that's where you're seeing some of these new OEMs are being a little more protective about who fixes their cars, who connects to their cars and all those kinds of things for that reason. Because I'll tell you, when things go bad, everybody loses. It's the insurer, the shop, the OEM. I'm never buying a Ford again. I'll buy a Chevy. I mean, everybody loses because the consumer looks like all of you failed, not just one of you failed. And that's the piece I'll tell you when you're working with like specially certified collision groups, they want to make sure that they protect the brand. Because I'll tell you know, 60% of them will change brands after a year because they never feel like that car is the same.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of stuff out there. And I'll tell you, it's not something that, you know, shops have got a big hill to climb in front of them. It's not easy. That's for sure.
Oh, exactly. So the one thing that when we talked beforehand, you mentioned a couple questions that shop owners should be asking themselves. And I wanted you to share that because I thought some of them were really kind of profound. So can you share what some of the questions shop owners should ask themselves in relation to growing and evolving their business?
Well, there's a number of shops that I've walked into, and especially around applying service manuals to the repair. Mm-hmm. And I asked them, I said, you know, when do you decide to go look? You know, when do you decide that we're going to use a manual on this car, but not that car or that car? Mm-hmm. What's the deciding factor? Right. And they're like, well, you know, we look up every mechanical repair. We look up structural repairs. Right. And I said, well, why wouldn't you research how to take a bumper cover off or how to take a headlight out or how to change a windshield or how to do a four-wheel alignment? And it's an assumed skill. Like they feel like they already know it. They don't have to look it up. Right. And that's where, when you're doing, you know, advanced driver assist calibration, a lot of those fundamental skills have changed in the last 5 years. So on a Ford Fusion, for instance, it'll say, if you change the rear suspension geometry, then you must do a lane camera calibration if the vehicle is equipped. And so not only are you putting yourself in a bad position about the repair, you're also throwing revenue out the door.
Right.
You know, there's things that you're not charging for.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like I told you, every body shop I've ever been to has that one technician that comes in, and we had the family discussion on Monday that the car was going to go on Tuesday. Tuesday morning, he comes in with we need some of these bolts because they're specialty and I don't have any. And I'm like, so did you research how to take the bumper cover off?
Right.
From the estimator. I asked him that. And no, we just wrote it. And I'm like, well, look at what we missed. We missed one-time use parts that he needs to reassemble the car.
Right.
And that's just a bumper cover, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those things that I just don't assume I know it. You know, battery disconnects. Those are the ones in diagnostics that'll bite you every time.
Oh, right.
You know, it sounds crazy, but on a Toyota, if you disconnect the battery, car was hitting the front. You disconnected the battery because you welded on it or whatever it was. Now the automatic liftgate doesn't work.
Oh, boy.
I tell you, let my wife catch you with the automatic liftgate not working. That's going to be a bad day for you and me.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things that, you know, don't assume that you know it. And it's just like anything else, any other piece of software that a person uses, whether it's Facebook or your Outlook or Candy Crush or whatever you used every day.
Right.
If you use the service manuals every day, you become very quick to where you can find things very quickly.
Ah.
And so as you're going through the drop-off procedure with the shot with the car, you know, you want to make sure that you understand what that car is going to require. And there was a lot of times I was running the Jaguar aluminum shop. You know, we were certified to work on aluminum Jaguars. We were not certified to work on aluminum Audis.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they're completely different tooling. And so, you know, just because we could fix those cars doesn't mean we could fix the others.
Yeah.
And so we would, you know, we'd have Audi customers come down to us because we didn't have an Audi certified shop in town. And I had to turn them away because you don't want to repair a car that you're not qualified to repair.
Right.
Or even tooled to repair.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, I'll tell you, that's hard for some shops to really digest because they're turning revenue away.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is we were upfront with those owners and say, hey, we're not tooled for this car, but here's the shop that is. And we'll work with Audi to arrange you getting the car there.
I got you. Okay.
And they're like, wow, I'll bring you everything else I got, you know, because you're honest with them, you know? So it's kind of a long-term win is my point. If you're not set up for those cars, you don't want to take one in because you could create a real big problem.
Right. So, right.
Oh. There was a lot of times I would get the carcass of a Jaguar and like a bunch of parts because somebody took it apart and then realized they couldn't fix it.
Oh no, I can't put it back together.
Yeah. I can't buy the parts because they're restricted or whatever. Right. And so then they send it down to us, you know?
Right. Right.
So it becomes the puzzle you don't want to work on.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There was, I think I remember there was a MASH program where the guy took apart a Jeep and it was the same thing. He had all the parts laying out. And then I was like, he goes, okay, well, we need this Jeep. Can you get back together? He's like, I don't know, but
eventually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, well, listen, Jay, we're getting close to time. Like I told you, I like to keep this about 30 minutes, but, before we go, first off, what I think is really fascinating is your technical knowledge, but also your knowledge on how the business owner needs to communicate to the customer. So I'd probably like to have you on again at some other time. Maybe sure. We can talk in more detail about these things. But sure. I know you do a lot of speaking. I know you're headed to SEMA next week. So if somebody is looking to get a hold of you, what is the best way to get in touch with you?
Probably email or something would be best. It's just jakerodenroth@yahoo.com.
Okay.
Probably the easiest one. Yep.
And we'll have that in the show notes too. So that you can get a hold of Jake. So if you, I just find he's got a wealth of knowledge that's here. And I think, again, this idea of knowing the technical end, but also knowing the customer servicing end is fascinating. So I think we should explore that. So, I want to thank you, Jake, for being on the program. And the last thank you goes to you, the listener. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to Your Business, Your Life with me, Matt DeFrancesco. And if you're not subscribed to the podcast, please click on the subscribe now button below. And that way, anytime a new episode comes up, it'll drop right onto your device. And also, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review because that will get us to many more people and hopefully get a lot of the great knowledge that we're getting from these guests out to more shop owners and more just business owners in general. So anyway, with that, thank you so much for listening. And from everyone here at Highlight Financial, make it your best day every day. And we'll see you again next time. So take care and God bless.
Thanks.
Hey, I really want to thank you for listening to the Your Business, Your Life podcast. If you want to be notified when new episodes become available, click the subscribe button below.
The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of High Lift Financial. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investment, legal, or tax advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified professional with any questions you may have regarding your business or personal planning. DeFrancesco Financial Concierge, LLC, DBA High Lift Financial, is a registered investment advisor. Registration with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission or any state security authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training.